From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Henry Epp. It's Monday, January 30th. Here are today's headlines.
The Scott administration last week asked lawmakers to delay work on what could be one of the biggest climate policies of the year. Vermont has committed by law to dramatically cut climate warming pollution, with big deadlines in 2025, 2030, and 2050. Most Vermonters heat with fossil fuels, and Senate lawmakers are working on a policy called a clean heat standard to change that. Governor Phil Scott vetoed a similar bill last year, and his staff commissioned its own study about how to cut emissions from buildings and how doing that would affect fuel prices. Natural Resources Secretary Julie Moore told lawmakers Thursday she wants them to wait for that data, which is due this spring.
Taking the time to create data-informed, durable environmental policy, regardless of whether or not the impact it has on the 2030 goal, I see as foundational to meeting the 2050 decarbonization goal for the state of Vermont.
If lawmakers delay action this session, it'll be harder for Vermont to meet its 2030 emissions requirement and open the state up to lawsuits.
About 2,200 support staff at the University of Vermont Medical Center in Burlington are poised to join a union. That's after a wide majority of workers who voted last week approved an effort to unionize. The new bargaining unit will include nursing assistants, unit secretaries, and other support staff. Jordan Bushway, a licensed nursing assistant, says she's feeling optimistic as the new union prepares to negotiate a contract with the hospital.
I am going to go in with high hopes and think that our administration will come to us and meet with us at the table in a respectful manner and a timely manner, and we're going to get this thing going. I mean, we didn't fight for this to sit around and do nothing.
In a statement, hospital president Dr. Stephen Leffler said he believes the election allowed all staff voices to be heard and said the administration expects to begin negotiating in good faith.
Vermont's hemp industry took a blow last week when the federal government said CBD products could not be labeled as dietary supplements, at least not until Congress creates new regulations surrounding their use. The federal government had never formally said whether or not people could make supplements with CBD, which is derived from hemp or cannabis. But the FDA released a statement that clarified the issue, says Carrie Jaguer with the Vermont Cannabis Control Board.
Basically, the road to market that are hemp producers have been using is now closed.
Jaguer says companies will have to relabel their products to continue selling them, though it's not yet clear what the feds will require for CBD products in the future.
And now, bonus data. Today's number is $15.33. That's the hourly wage that an average single Vermonter needs to make to meet their basic needs. This is according to the latest livable wage report from the Joint Fiscal Office. The amount jumped by almost $2 since 2020, making it the largest single increase since the state began keeping track of the economic indicator. 2 years ago, the livable wage was $13.39. So what drove up that amount? The cost of housing and transportation and inflation, according to the report.
Coming up, the debate over a universal school meals program. More after this.
Thanks for tuning in to The Frequency, and thanks to Vita for their support. Vita, celebrating 50 years of helping Vermont businesses grow and thrive. From agriculture to energy, startups to established companies, find solutions that fit your business. Visit VEDA.org to start your next chapter.
Last week, a debate over the future of a program that provides universal free meals in Vermont schools came to the fore in Montpelier. Funding for the program is set to expire at the end of the school year, and Governor Phil Scott and the legislature are at odds over whether to extend it. For more, State House reporter Peter Hirschfeld spoke with All Things Considered host Mary Angish.
Pete, school nutrition folks have been urging lawmakers to permanently fund free breakfast and free lunch for all students in Vermont. What case are they making?
Carol Kent is the school nutrition director at the Lamoille North Supervisory Union, which serves a very rural and relatively low-income population of students. She told legislators that she wanted to thank them for setting aside $29 million in last year's budget to fund universal meals for this current school year. And she said their decision to do that has been nothing short of transformational. Have a listen.
You have changed a system and you have changed a culture in the schools in Vermont. And I just got to say it again, you have changed the culture of school nutrition in the state of Vermont, and you are setting a model for schools across the country.
You will hear a version, Mary, of what Carol Kent told the House Education Committee from just about every school nutrition director in Vermont. And there are a number of reasons they love this program so much. For one, it has reportedly done a pretty good job eliminating or at least mitigating the stigma that low-income kids experience when they get their meals. Class divides used to manifest pretty obviously in the cafeteria based on what kids had to do to get their meals or what meals the kids happened to be eating. Universal free meals has, according to nutrition directors at least, democratized the act of eating, and you no longer have this visibly tiered system of food dispensation that makes it clear what kids might be struggling financially at home. There are other benefits as well. Administering federal free and reduced price meal programs is a giant bureaucratic headache, it turns out. Now that nutrition directors and their staffs don't have to expend as much time on that, they say they have more time to do things like cook from scratch, do recipe tasting, create delicious and nutritious meals that kids are actually excited to eat. They're also buying more food from local producers. Lawmakers created an incentive program where the more local food a district buys, the more money they get from the state. And finally, another thing I've heard over and over again is school staff no longer have to hound parents for school meal debts. It can create enormous tension between schools and parents. And for school staff, it can be awful because they know they're trying to collect a debt from a family that, in a lot of cases, has no way to pay it.
Governor Phil Scott unveiled his state budget proposal. It notably did not include funding to extend universal meals. What are his objections to this program?
So Phil Scott says he absolutely wants to help students in need, right? And if a kid's parents don't have the means to feed them, then he thinks government should foot the bill. But he says we already have a program that does that in the form of the USDA's free and reduced price meal program. And he says it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to him to put limited taxpayer resources toward a class of Vermonters that probably doesn't need them.
My own feeling is, and I had this concern when we had this debate last year, was a universal program would in fact burden those we're trying to help those who are affluent enough to pay for it.
The governor says low and moderate income Vermonters pay taxes too. He says it seems like a misguided policy decision to have their tax dollars pay for free lunch for kids with rich parents.
And Pete, to Phil Scott's point, it might rub some Vermonters the wrong way to know that their tax dollars are buying lunch for kids whose parents can easily afford it. What do advocates for universal free meals say about that argument?
It turns out that you have to be living pretty close to the bone to qualify for that federal free and reduced price meal program. Once a family of four hits $36,100 a year in household income, their kids are no longer eligible for free lunch. At $51,000 a year, they stop getting the reduced rate. Again, that's for a family of four. Nonpartisan fiscal analysts that work in the legislature say that in order for a family of four to meet its basic needs in Vermont, we're talking the basics here, food, housing, gas, they need to take in about $70,000 a year. And Honora Horton with Hunger Free Vermont says the problem with relying on the federal program is that it leaves so many needy families in the lurch.
So there's about 30 to 40% of the students attending school in Vermont right now who fall into that gap, whose families are not actually fully able to meet their basic needs. And the easiest thing to cut there is a food budget, but they also can't afford school meals, and they'll never qualify for them under the federal guidelines.
Horton says universal school meals eliminate that financial barrier to nutrition for kids. The number of kids eating school meals has jumped by about 10% since the advent of universal school meals during the 2019-2020 school year. Horton thinks that number is going to grow pretty dramatically as the program increases, and she says the kids that need it most are going to benefit the most.
At this stage of the debate, Pete, do you have any sense whether lawmakers will decide to include universal meals in their budget plan despite Phil Scott's opposition?
There's no question lawmakers think it's a worthy program. I haven't talked to many lawmakers that don't think it makes sense in concept, but it is going to cost the state about $20 million a year every year forever to keep this program going, and that's not a small sum. The chair of the Appropriations Committee told me she loves universal school meals, but she said there are also a lot of similarly compelling line items that lawmakers are going to have to contend with. It's also not just a matter of spending the money. It's where that money comes from if lawmakers do decide to move forward. There's general consensus that if Vermont does do this, then the money needs to come from the education fund that we used to pay for schools. But if you add the expense to the education fund, then that's going to mean an increase in property taxes. They don't want to raise property taxes. And in order to avoid that, they would have to find a new revenue source to fund school meals. That means a tax hike somewhere else, and that's always a difficult decision to make. I'll say it definitely looks like the legislature is coalescing around school meals as a worthy candidate for permanent funding. I think it'll be a lot harder for them to find consensus on how exactly they should go about raising the money to pay for it.
That was reporter Peter Hirschfeld speaking with Mary Angish. Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Howard Weiss Tisman and Abigail Giles.
Our executive producer is Mark Davis. Our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Henry Epp.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. Talk to you tomorrow.
Every episode of Brave Little State begins with a question about Vermont that's been submitted and voted on by listeners like you. What happened to all the restaurant workers? What's the deal with Vermont's fire towers? Why do people like the band Phish? Follow Brave Little State wherever you get podcasts. From Vermont Public, part of the NPR network.